of pathos and tragedy as exemplified in The Scar of Shame. Commercial success lured black performers away from efforts at truly ethnic drama. Small theater groups from which film companies such as Colored Players Film Corporation emerged tended to mimic white serious theater, and The Scar of Shame can be said to have adopted, to some degree, such elements as dramatic tension and suspense, evil and good forces pitted against each other, love relations and misalignments, heightened by a seriousness that we have not encountered in other early films in this class. W.E. Du Bois was one of the strongest promoters of authentic Negro theater, about which he claimed should have four fundamental principles: about us, by us, for us, and near us. This was the aim, too, of those involved with Colored Players Film Corporation, and tells us more about their orientation towards their craft and their intent for their audience. At the same time, traumas felt and experienced by the black mentality during this time frame were cultural doubt of provincialism, fluidity and impermanence of status in a democracy, the phantom of identity where institutions and order were always in flux, the anxiety of an achievement ethic, and the possible terror in view of change itself. White commerce dictated success, and this is another subtle notion felt in Scar of Shame when looking at its principal performers and other notable black performers of the day. Many were chosen for portrayals who were light-skinned, particularly actresses and other female performers such as dancers in revues and singers. Some documentation suggests the white notion of beauty is responsible for these portrayals, which are now seen as a compromise of sorts, though at the time it was supposed to represent true beauty. This can be seen in the character of Louise, who was chosen for a part on the basis of her beauty, as she had had no previous acting experience comparable to the other players in the film. Thus, the uncertainties facing black performers mentioned above must be taken into account when examining a film like Scar of Shame. I'm not interested in finding inconsistencies, rather I feel it necessary to look at the time frame, which was particularly difficult for blacks and women, but during which many artistic advancements were achieved. Sorry. Right now, I'm going to examine the film in terms of what Madiboko Diakite calls, Carl Mannheim was the first who came up with this system, is an approach to a deeper level of comprehension of black artistic product through three stages of analysis, and this is according to Diakite's book, Film Culture and the Black Filmmaker. One is the objective meaning, which locates and describes what is self-contained in the work and identifying those elements to examine the film as it stands. Two is the expressive meaning, which is the psychic content which contains and reflects attitudes, beliefs, and the outlooks of the artists and the society from which the work emerged. And three, which he called the documentary analysis, which is interpretive rather than explanatory, and examines the soul that emerges from the work itself. And I'm going to attempt to analyze Scar of Shame according to these three things. A, in regards
to the principle. I missed some of it. Because that means
objective that meaning, expressive meaning, and documentary analysis.
Okay.
In regards to the objective or outline meaning, and that can be summed up crudely in the synopsis. It is what the film contains and thus is. It's really looking at the bare bones facts of the film. This takes into account implications inherent in the film as well, i.e. class and its relationship to ambition in the black community. B, for the expressive meaning, we must look at the society from which the film emerged. Thus, we must examine the state of mind that identifies specific features of black culture which crosses economic and geographical lines, but which has no clearly defined boundaries. Black American culture has features that are at once identifiable by blacks in both the middle and lower classes, according to Diakite. The black sociocultural community is to be interpreted as, quote, people who mutually understand and share features of behavior and tradition to the point where easy discourse and communication might be had regardless of class or geographical lines, unquote. This is the kind of idea we must discuss in regards to Scar of Shame. The psychic content of the film focuses on some distinctions between class and geographical lines. It is from an urban environment and directed to an urban influx produced by blacks who had some knowledge of film business, as we can measure by the subsequent success it had as a feature film. Ultimately, that group was responsible for presenting the film's projected ideas as well. They chose to produce a film that portrays blacks who existed on several class or caste levels within the urban existence. These are, as seen in the main characters, Eddie the Weasel, always looking for a quick buck and an immediate gratification without having to work for it. He's shady and ignorant, yet he's street smart and conniving. Lucretia Green throws him out of her boarding house saying, "I don't want your type in my house," which gives you an idea of what type he is. He indulges in drink, gambles, and appreciates women, but does not respect them. Spike is obviously of the poverty line and below. He's dependent upon drink, he's unambitious, he barely knows right from wrong, and can barely control his own actions. He's confused and has no purpose, and is not as street smart as Eddie, although he's in cahoots with him. Spike was Louise's father. Lucretia Green, a woman who ran the boarding house, innocent and respectable character, concerned with cleanliness and godliness, always willing to serve others. Evil is not a part of her character, though she can spot it when she confronts it in others. She's an elder woman who has hope and optimism for the young. Louise is a totally innocent character, ignorant yet good, who embodies the idea of promise and possibility. She dreams of, but does not actually aspire to, a higher station in life when we meet her. She's on the same economic level as Spike, her father. Alvin represents the serious, educated, respectable boarder who will someday be a credit to his race, according to Lucretia Green. Yet he is eternally skeptical and thinks himself a bit better than the others. He's from outside of the urban environment, and exists on the highest level, along with Ralph Hathaway, of success in financial and intellectual terms. Thus we see all the characters' existing stations in life and watch them dissolve and rearrange into what they become in the film. The idea being that the characters choose on one hand to alter their existing lives, and on the other, in the case of Alvin, are forced into stations of life which don't suit or jibe with their psychological states of mind. Those psychological states of mind, in turn, are based on such factors as family they come from, type of financial, educational, or cultural influences, etc., that one is exposed to and assimilates into a psychological mindset. This gives us a bare-bones indication of the different types of lifestyles experienced by blacks at the time, particularly within an urban environment. C is the documentary idea which emerges from the film and is felt in terms of personal ambitions and options. The good way is to aspire towards the finer aspects of the arts, language, music, and high social recognition. The bad way is to associate with those outside one's social confines and aspire to a lifestyle which offers a quickly financially rewarding but intellectually blank existence and an involvement with negative social activities such as those seen in the activities participated in at the Lido Club. Both principal characters are, in effect, punished as victims of both options, and it is mainly through this that we experience or feel the soul of the film's messages. My reasonings on Scar of Shame, based on research and opinion. A new optimism spread throughout the United States after World War I, giving encouragement to people at all levels of American life. A new sense of black consciousness emerged amongst black people, partly encouraged by the bravery of black soldiers during that war. The early 20s saw the emergence of an urban black middle class and an interest in films. Films featuring blacks increased as the economies of many blacks increased. However, the black film companies which appeared throughout the U.S. were mostly ill-equipped, badly financed, and unorganized. The end of the sound era then left Michaud and one or two other filmmakers surviving as independent black filmmakers struggling to realize the dream of the black film industry. Scar of Shame did not emerge during the sound era, so we have the limiting lack of sound and dialogue which could have enhanced the film's meaning. Thus, much of the meaning is derived symbolically and in the actual use of the film technique. The first shot of Louise scrubbing by hand in her washtub immediately tells us her position in life, as does Alvin's thoughtful poses at his piano. Lucretia serving her guests, Spike staggering around the streets, and Eddie's gambling also tell us these things. Clothing is another immediate indication of how these characters supposedly perceive themselves. Louise obviously looks nicer after she's married. This is when the social problems arise in the film, also most clearly seen in communications from Alvin's mother. and the accidental smashing of Louise's doll, which foreshadows her own accident and tells us she is a victim of social caste. Tells her at the same time she's a victim of social caste, more importantly. Here the wedding ring and the marriage license also symbolize their uncertain and uneven match. The film technique itself lends an added meaning to the film, especially when looking at it in the context of other films by black companies at the time. It is more sophisticated in its use of the narrative form and makes for a smooth-flowing, even-paced feature film that contains true elements of entertainment, both in its story content and in the film execution itself. Derived of sound, we must depend more on subtle indications such as lighting, cinematography, and editing. The settings are realistic, which gives the film a kind of filmic sincerity. It was and still is perceived as a professional production due to these elements, but the problem is that they give the film a psychological credence as well. It may have been inspiring or encouraging to blacks at the time to seek a higher, more intellectual aim in life when, in a social and financial sense, that aim is based, for the most part, on white supremacist ethics and values, than to simply exist within a confining framework. Yet it is demeaning in the same manner, I believe, particularly noting the ignorant slang speech of Spike and Eddie. We are led to believe society is the ultimate cause of all the problems between the characters, and that Alvin, by marrying Louise, is helping his race by affording her the chance to marry well. While merely transgressing society's imposed social strata systems is not the answer to the problem of black advancement, as Louise finds out by becoming marred physically by her own attempt to step up in the world. Her scar becomes a symbol she must carry for life as a punishment for marrying Alvin, as aspiring to join his social set, which she was not born into. I think this idea could have been interpreted by some at the time as saying, look what happens when you try to advance your position in society. The same idea is seen by Alvin's being sent to jail for associating with Louise, marrying her and thus taking on her social stigma, which led to his gunfight with Eddie and Louise's resulting scar. Her subsequent death is further testament to this notion. That she dies for Alvin's name to be cleared is certainly melodramatic when we see it on film, and the film can be regarded as a tragedy because of it. Diakite suggests the most fitting approach to ascertaining the intentions of black filmmakers should be to compare the completed film with the filmmaker's goals both before production began and after it is completed. Unfortunately, this we cannot properly research at this time, but the filmmaker's intentions are often wrongly interpreted to mean the filmmaker's meaning, which has prompted misunderstandings and misinterpretations, particularly of this film. This is especially common in film cultures where the eagerness to sell the story surpasses the intended meaning of the total work. Thus, the interpretation becomes an act that borders the line between creative choice, which is the artist's intentions, and creativity, which is the artistic intention. Although we must examine the film in the urban Philadelphian context, we cannot expect it to be entirely representative of American blacks at the time. It is representative of the kinds of films made by Colored Players Films Corporation in Philadelphia when one discusses their other productions. Scar of Shame shows a strong sense of race consciousness, identities, and optimism through the tragic story it presents on screen to the audience. It shows the need for and the importance of an identifiable, organized black cinema in this country and helps give us a better perspective of where that cinema comes from and how it was used. I believe Scar of Shame is an extremely effective film in presenting its intentions, although a bit too heavy-handed in my eyes. I have not drawn complete conclusions in this presentation in summation because I feel there are many levels of interpreting Scar of Shame, some of which we discussed in class last Thursday. My own ideas about this film have changed significantly after researching it and trying to formulate my own thoughts on it. So for this reason, I've tried to offer additional information for the purpose of rounding out all of our ideas concerning this film. You look like you have a lot of questions.
I think that was excellent. Really, I'm intimidated. I wish I did hear my presentation 4 weeks ago. Really good.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's excellent.
More questions?
There are a couple of things that... Well, the approach that you use is valid. In the absence of the broader concept of how racism dictates behavior not only of the filmmakers being part of society, but the content of the artistic work as well. And that plays into not only the substance of a film like Scar or Shame, which is not unique in and of itself, because other projects earlier had similar kinds of themes. A colored man winning his suit, an earlier film, is also indicative of the black professional making it in society and what the credentials were for his making it in society. Another example, the earlier Lincoln Pictures of By Right of Birth, again, focuses on the same elements. And what all of these films have in common is that they were expressive of the middle class, the black middle class. And the black middle class's interpretation of itself in the racist society was that it could somehow or the other overcome racism by performing in very specific kinds of ways, meaning what America said is if you got an education, if you became cultured, you could somehow or the other get into the mainstream of American life and be accepted in spite of your color. But what the black middle class was discovering over and over again, the reality was no matter how much one achieved, one was still black, and that had a very specific meaning in the racial society of America. And it continues to be a premise on which many films are made and many artistic endeavors are molded and shaped in some way or the other. Maybe not as simplistically as the earlier films, in terms of their art or their craft. But nonetheless, I think that's an important ingredient that had a great deal to do with the way in which the film is shaped and molded.
There are some research I found that where people, even in the day that the film was released, said, this has nothing at all to do with blacks. This is just typical of a Darwinian universe.
Well, when you look at Sweet Bat, a lot of people will say,
which I didn't use,
this has nothing to do with blacks. It is, I maintain it is essentially what one does not want to accept. That is a part of reality.
Yeah.
It's painful on the one hand. And what is extremely painful and interesting about Scar or Shame is that when this film is shown to a middle-class black audience, and I've had this experience a number of times, one of the things that surfaces that is very difficult to discuss is the color cast system in that film. I mean, the idea that that still exists, and it does, is something that few people want to talk about and deal with.
That's why I tried to examine the characters themselves and how they're sort of staggered throughout that system. And even though we don't see people like Alvin's mother, she's actually perceived almost on the highest level, probably with Ralph Hathaway, and then Alvin going down the line after that all the way down to Spike, who I pretty much saw as the lowest example.
Yeah, and she has a butler. And she lives in the country.
Right.
Do you think, what I'm wondering is if there is in the film some link, if Louise was maybe supposed to serve as the link, or if Mrs. Green,
Lucretia Green,
if she's supposed to represent, I mean, in this hierarchy, if there is in fact a viable link between the top and the bottom of the hierarchy.
Louise is sort of the black, the empty, the tabula rasa, or whatever they call it, blank slate, who I thought exemplified promise and possibility, is the way I put it. But you see her at first existing on a very low level, but you feel more about her that she has promise, or she has possibility, or she has potential of some kind, which she eventually fulfills, but in a way of her, which is a combination of her own choosing and urging on the part of Eddie to aspire to a different lifestyle, which she immediately perceives as more rewarding but which has negative social connotations, mm-hmm. which is, you know, financially rewarding, but the gambling, drinking atmosphere of the Lido Club is not, at the time, what people thought you should aspire to. So in that way, I do see her as a link, because she's sort of a crossover figure in a lot of ways. She doesn't ever really cross over, though, which is the part about transgressing society, not necessarily leading to advancement.
When you said that Louise's scar came from her attempt to step up her circumstances or whatever, do you feel like that was a direct result of her conscious attempt to better herself?
I don't think she really had a conscious in the film. Almost everyone was making up her mind for her. That's how I felt. I felt that she was an ignorant, innocent character, which could be, her purpose in the film was to be molded for the purpose of showing a story and the situations that they want, that they intended to show. But when you say, I think the film could have been interpreted as saying, look what happens when you try to step up in society. I think that maybe the intentions that they wanted, they just appeared different to me. So I had to approach it from my initial feeling about the film. And as far as being enlightening, the basic idea behind the film is enlightening. But then to show two people who I felt get punished for Alvin for associating with a lower social class and Louise for associating with a higher social class, they are both in effect punished.
That's why I wonder when you say for attempting. The film is optimistic, because I saw, if Louise is in fact supposed to be the link between the two, and the fact that she not only fails but ends up committing.
Well, that's why the film is a tragedy, and it would have been a whole different thing if they had carried out a different way. It's not completely realistic, because it is so melodramatic, I thought. Mm-hmm. When I said it's a little heavy-handed, that's what I meant. But it couldn't have been any other way.
If you perceived it as a morality play, or a melodrama which presented a message to its audience, and its audience was perceived as being black, the role of Louise represents something a little bit different. It's not simply her inability to rise in the social set. I mean, she is a kind of a metaphor for all of the underclass blacks who are being told in this movie how one can achieve, how one can move in society. And it's not only saying that if one achieved education and sort of cultural aspirations, this would improve your vision of the world, and therefore you would be able to move more easily in the world. It's not saying that because you are born of a particular class that you cannot move from one to the other. What it does also bring out, and which is part of the contradiction and conflict, I think, in the film, is that the class which is there is not ready yet to accept you, in spite of the fact that if you have all these things which allow you to move into it, they are not as accepting as they should be. And I think the film is in a sense as much an attack on that social strata as it is on, you know, the attack on the lower class. By attack, I mean pointing up the problems at that level, and also pointing up the problems at the other level. So it becomes a kind of social morality play.
Yeah. And you can really analyze it forever.
And it justifies Alvin being punished, because he is not, in essence, a true hero, mm-hmm. although he exemplifies all the ingredients mm-hmm. of being one. Right? I mean, he's protector of women, he has good manners, he's intelligent, and he's able to, you know, maneuver, and et cetera, et cetera. To map out a place for himself as a career, and when one is thwarted, he's able to, you know, move to another. So that in interpreting it in that way, and it's true, film can be interpreted in many different ways. I think that it justifies the tragic element. It's very necessary because the film is not simply about how good it is to be a part of the middle class. One other minor point, the wardrobes. When I interviewed Lucia Lynn Moses, I gleaned a lot of information from her, which was applicable to what was happening with other films made during the period. And one of them is the fact that she only worked on the production on weekends, right? And she was paid with extra money, so she didn't take the whole concept of the film very seriously. She was told what the situation was in the scene she was shooting, and she ad-libbed her way through it.
She never really had a complete, comprehensive idea of what the film was
about. She knew what her character was supposed to be. I mean, that was described to her. But as far as having actual lines to read and to memorize, this was not the case. They were given a scene, and that's also interesting and significant when you talk about the definition of black cinema, because you're talking about situations in which the actor or actress can identify with. Right? There's very little in that film that cannot be sort of lifted out of an everyday kind of occurrence and verbalized. I mean, an actress, and Louise, I think, Lucia was a natural actress, although she had no formal training. She was a natural. And her statement on acting, when she received an award in 1974, was that, I mean, she didn't think of herself as an actress. She felt that people acted every day of their lives, and that's all she did when she appeared in front of the camera. She was herself, and she did what she thought was a kind of normal reaction given the situation that she was told and she was involved in this unreal, in this movie fantasy, whatever. So that not only was she ad-libbing the role, but if you can look at the film again at some point and watch the actors' mouths, you can almost read what they're saying. Right? And I think in some instances, some of you picked it up, because especially when Eddie calls Louise a son of a bitch. Right? I mean, that is very clear, very obvious in that particular scene. That tells you something also about the structure of these movies during this period. She also indicated that the amount of money that she received was extra. She had a regular job, but she continued 5 days a week at the Cotton Club. She brought almost all of her friends, anybody who she could get a hold of who was free for the weekend, to appear as extras in that movie. They brought their own wardrobes with them. Louise borrowed her sister's dress for the final scene. Everything else that she wore in the film was her own. I don't think that the costuming was, I don't even think it was
purposeful.
A credit. I don't even think it was a credit. I think what they wanted from Louise was a glamorous figure and a new face, because the Code for the Film Corporation had a standard group of actors and actresses that they had used in all their other films. And for this particular role, they wanted a new, young face. So, I mean, I say all this to try to fill in the background in terms of how one can interpret the dress in the film, how one can interpret the acting styles, and looking at the finished product, what went into it, is important. It is not as slick as it appears. It's very cleverly done, that one has a sense that it's a well-acted, scripted play. Indeed, there was a story written for it, but as far as actual lines for the filmmakers, for the actresses and actors, filmmakers relied heavily on the actors and actresses' ability to sort of ad-lib their way through a situation that was created for them. You have a funny look on your face. You do have a lot of questions.
Well, there one of the things that I'm wondering as far as Louise is concerned about what you just said. I'm getting two messages. One is that you worked on the film on the weekends and didn't really become terribly involved in the whole thing, and yet it sounds as if she must have been making a good deal of sacrifice to work in it and bringing friends and giving up the free time that she had. And I guess I thought that in a lot of films, and maybe in particular Scar's Shame, that some it was a personal endeavor on the part of the actors, that when they were in it, it was through some commitment of themselves to relay this message to everyone in general. And
not quite that purposeful. I think, if you remember that films during this period are considered, it was glamorous. And many people worked from Oscar Michaud for practically nothing just so they could be in the film. It was a selling device to see oneself on the screen. I indicated, I think at one point, that there was a theater owner in rural Mississippi who used to